Welcome to Changing Light Bulbs, the podcast that's dedicated to innovation and transformation in all of their forms.
I am your host, Greg R. McGovern, and today my journey continues with my guest, Franco. Franco is an interesting individual who not only has gone through his own significant life changes, but now dedicates himself to making change in others. The thing I took away from Franco's conversation was this ability to slip back into old behaviors. And I think it's a consistent theme, no matter if you're an individual who's gone through change or if you're an individual who has to make change in others. I think the conversation with him was also fascinating just for how personal and raw his story was. I hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks very much for taking the time. Please take a listen. Awesome. So Franco, thank you so much coming to our podcast and talking about transformation and change.
Yeah, my pleasure, Greg.
So as we talked about a little bit earlier, just to kind of break the ice, I'm going to ask you a question about art, drama, something, anything in your life that kind of made an impact on it.
Definitely. So there was a, when I was in the grips of my addiction, probably one of my darkest times, there were a couple songs that I would listen to. There was Biggie Smalls, Suicidal Thoughts, and still today when I hear that song every now and then, it'll come across on my playlist on my phone. It instantly brings me back to those dark times in a basement, you know, not wanting to live and really relating to some of the lyrics and verses in those songs, right? So still today it'll bring chills to my spine when I hear that song.
Wow, that's very cool. All right, so why don't you tell the audience what you do today?
So today I'm a, you know, executive director and owner of Freedom From Addiction in Aurora. You know, I'm really proud to say that I'm in a position now where I can kind of lay out the path of recovery for other addicts, you know, in the grips of addiction. You know, just I get to be present. I love spending time with the clients. I'm not too into the clinical area. I got, you know, people who handle that, all the paperwork and whatnot and computer stuff. Me personally, I thrive in the back, hanging out with the guys, talking to them, motivating them, and allowing them to understand that, you know, just breathing hope into them, right? And hopefully they can get that, you know, you can live without drugs and alcohol and live a great life, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you just gave me a tour of this facility. It's unbelievably impressive.
Thank you.
That's fantastic, the work that you've done. Tell the audience a little bit about what the facility has and what it can do.
Yeah. So we have a full medical detox. So we specialize in taking people off methadone, Suboxone, you know, opiates, all the opiates, heroin, morphine, fentanyl, which is one of the leading causes of OD deaths with the kids today. Alcohol especially. So they spend about 7 to 10 days in the basement with the nurses in the detox area. Once they're medically cleared, they come upstairs, they get two primary counselors, and they start working with their therapists. So we believe in one-on-ones. That's where the miracle is at. So we're offering about 4 to 5 one-on-ones a week. In my opinion, in my journey, this is where things get better. This is where you can sit down one-on-one with a therapist and start talking about those secrets and you know, things that had happened to you, things you've seen, you know, that's possibly traumatized you, any emotional loss. So all, you know, there's a saying in addiction, we're sick as our secrets. And you know, I carried some secrets all my life and I couldn't seem to get sober. And when I got rid of that, you know, per se garbage that I've been carrying all these years, I started feeling the changes, you know, in myself and feeling better about myself, not carrying these horrible secrets anymore. So we try and make it as comfortable as possible. But most importantly, I think it's the team that have here that's, you know, ready to help anybody, right?
That's fantastic. Yeah. And this is really, everything that you do today is based on your personal journey. So why don't you tell the audience a little bit about that journey?
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, you know, I struggle with opiates and crack cocaine for... the crack cocaine came in the last year, but opiates has been a 15 to 20 year addiction. I couldn't seem to kick it on my own. Many, many attempts. I'm a product of 12 treatment centers. You know, I got probably $150,000 in private treatment centers. A lot of those, you know, I'm not going to talk poorly about any center. I wasn't ready for them, number one, or it wasn't fit for a client like me. You know, I was stubborn, you know, low self-esteem, huge ego, self-centered, full of pride. And I just wasn't ready for the message. So, you know, it was like this huge journey of taking beatings, right? The more pain. And, you know, I don't really want to get into the gory stuff, but all I want to get right to, you know, the last month or two where things were really horrible. I no longer wanted to live, thoughts of suicide. You know, I just saw no hope in it. You know, I'd seen people recovering around me. I thought I was defected, you know, something wrong with me and I'm never going to be able to get this. You know, it's a beautiful thing. I feel like, you know, I'm going to call it a God moment. I know that word might scare a few people, but I had a moment of clarity. And, you know, it was one time, it was like a 5-minute thing. And I wanted to live a little bit more than I wanted to die. And it was a full surrender. And I went to my last treatment center. And that's, you know, where I got honest. I got willing and I kept an open mind. I finally came to a place in my life where I realized, you know, my best thinking got me to where I was. And at that point, I was homeless. I didn't have a dollar in my pocket. I was picking cigarette butts off the floor. And nobody wanted nothing to do with me. And here's the truth, right? Nor should they. I was a complete animal. I was a user and a taker. And I took from the people closest to me, like my family, right? Going through that journey in that treatment center, you know, really wanting it. And I really made a decision in my soul that I, you know, I was going to do whatever it takes and I was going to become willing and listen to the people who walked in front of me, right? And you know, Greg, when that happened, recovery became so much easier than I ever thought, you know? See, the real battle is out there in my addiction when I was hustling every day. You know, I was dope sick and I was, you know, how am I going to get my next fix and who am I going to steal from and who am I going to rob and how am I going to get, you know, every day was a battle. Whereas recovery, it just became so simple when I became willing and I was willing to take direction, right? Most importantly, that high I chased and that escape, you know, from the horrible feelings I had inside me all my life I chased. I'm getting that today watching, you know, young men and women come through here, you know, with the lights off, sad, depressed, angry, you know, in the grips of addiction and walking out of here with a sense of freedom. And I love seeing families getting their, you know, their husbands and their wives and their children back and, you know, kids getting their fathers back. So it's an amazing feeling. I take no credit for anyone's recovery, but I love being part of all the journeys, right? It's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. Yeah. And you talked about you being ready for change. Do you think change can occur with people and if they're not ready, or do they have to come to that point?
Yeah, so, you know, being in the industry, I see a lot of, you know, guys come in and girls, and I can kind of tell that they've been pushed in here or not really wanting to be here. And it's just, it's almost impossible. Now, having said that, I've seen a few people come in not wanting to be here, and then, you know, bam, something happens. They hear something, see something, excuse me, and you know, the change occurs here. So I've thought someone, you know, wasn't going to make it and then have been wrong. And then flip side, you know, someone will come in, you know, take off out the gate wanting this and then leave. And the ego and pride comes back and, you know, they don't make it. So it's hard to put a finger on that. But all I know is, you know, recovery and treatment becomes very easy when you make that decision yourself that you want change and you've had enough of that lifestyle. I've been to so many centers with the idea of going in there, taking a 30-day break, 60-day break, and then leaving knowing I'm going right back to the same people, place, and things, right? Deep down, I had that reservation, maybe just one. Maybe this time I'll be able to control it. And, you know, I fell flat on my face every time, right? So I was fully convinced that, you know, this was not something I can handle alone and I needed the help of others. You know, it's a we program. And even today, coming up on 7 years clean, I continue to live in recovery. I do things in recovery every day. It's got nothing to do with this place or my work. I have my own meetings I go to. I'm a 12-step member. I hang around with people in recovery and I love it today. Those are my closest friends, you know, people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So what do you think are the key elements of getting from that point where you're at the lowest point to there? You talked a little bit about hope. You talked a little bit about recognizing in yourself you got to change. Is there any other big elements?
You know, I'm gonna throw this four-letter word out, and it's pain, right? And not physical pain. I'm talking about that deep, you know, down in your spirit, emotional pain where, you know, I grew up in a very loving family with a lot of friends and a lot of things per se, you know, nice cars and jewelry and clothes and, you know, all that. And all that meant nothing in the end, right? When, you know, you phone your wife or your mom or your brothers and they don't answer the phone and no one wants nothing to do with you anymore. See, people would go out of their way to invite me to a party in the past. And now, you know, no one wanted nothing to do with me no more, right? So I had that, oh my God, you know, what's happened to my life, right? And it's a slow process, right, Greg? It's not like I went from this, you know, successful man, married with kids, you know, a house and business and making all this money, to homeless, picking up cigarette butts off the floor in 1 week. It was like a 20-year process. So so slow and insidious that you don't realize it. And by the time you get to that, you know, the edge, I'm going to call it, of the cliff, and one more step and I'm dead. By that time, you're just, you know, you're baffled, right? And there's a few words they use to describe addiction or alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And I had no idea how I got there. And the truth is, it took me about a year to figure out what happened to my life.
You know? Right, right.
What happened? How did I get here? And what have I done? And you know, it's just an accumulation of a whole bunch of horrible decisions, right? And that's what got me there. So the pain and, you know, my family raising my bottom for me, you know, not responding calls, not supporting me financially or emotionally, telling me I was no longer, you know, welcome at their home, that helped me get to where I needed to get to get to a place to get to where I am today.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, you yeah. know, and that tough love piece.
Of course, yeah.
Is that critically important for everybody who goes through therapy?
It's hard to say. I mean, for me personally, that's what worked for me. And we do suggest that for families. There's a lot of enabling codependency with families. And as a mother or a father, you know, they feel their job is to love my son or my daughter, and I need to support them. Now, unfortunately, with addiction, because we're, you know, so self-centered and self-serving, the more we can take from you, the more my addiction thrives.
Right.
And there's really no need for me to change if someone's enabling my behavior. So if I'm getting $50 from my mom every day still, there's really no need for me to change. It's only when I have nothing, everybody's gone, nobody's around me, I turn around, you know, I'm alone, I'm sick every day, and I'm tired of hustling. That's where there's an opportunity for me to make some changes in my life.
Absolutely. So you go through this process. What were the key elements that helped you through that process?
Well, at that point, I think that's when family is important. They came in to support me and get me into a treatment center. You know, if I'm making good decisions in my life and I'm on this path of recovery doing better, I do believe, you know, it's important for family to come back in and support those good decisions, right? Hanging out with awesome people, excuse me. So one of the biggest mistakes I see early recovery is a whole bunch of early recovery guys hanging together thinking they're going to do this alone. Now, a sick mind can't help a sick mind. And, yeah. you know, one guy makes a bad decision, you know, let's forget about that. Let's go watch a movie or go for coffee. And you just open the door to, you know what, it's not that important. Maybe we can do this on our own. So what I did is I started hanging around with people who had, you know, 5, 10, 15 years recovery and just mimicking what they're doing, right? So just copying what they're doing. And, you know, days go by, weeks go by, and years go by, and here I am today. And I never thought, you know, in a million years I'd be able to say, you know, I don't smoke a joint, I don't drink alcohol, no champagne, you know, for New Year's, nothing, right? Complete abstinence for me.
And did your family, your kids and everything support you through that process?
So this thing right now I'm in a position where my daughters are 14 and 12. I think they have an idea of what happened to dad or what's going on. They know my industry. They know I help people. And I haven't had really the chat with them about, you know, what happened to dad through this process of addiction into recovery. I do believe they have an idea about it. So it's something that, you know, there's a little fear around that, a little anxiety about me having the chat with them about that. But as far as, you know, my wife and my mom and my brothers, tons of support. You know, they're really proud of me. And, you know, there's a part in our program where we make a direct amends. And that's where you start seeing people glow when, you know, you start being accountable for your actions and you apologize for certain things that had happened. And, you know, and you see your loved ones light up like a Christmas tree. And they're like, basically, you know, we're really proud of you. And we just want you to keep doing what you're doing, right?
That's great. What a great feeling. What a great feeling. So, is there a moment that you know you made it? You're now through this process?
It's funny you say that. So you don't want to get too egotistical or confident in this program where you say, you know, I got this, because we have a little saying with, you know, with my friends is the day you think you got it is when you need more help, right? Having said that, Greg, you know, in my soul, in my spirit, I know I've had enough of that, you know,
right.
And I got a good grasp of this program and I love it and I continue to work it and I continue to improve myself every day. So, you know, yeah, I do feel that, like, you know, I finally got this, because so many years of attempting and failing to finally get into a place where you're putting some years together and you're feeling good about yourself and you're doing cool things and you're helping other people. You get this feeling inside is like, you know, finally, you know, I found some peace in my life, right? But to say I got this licked, or, you know, I got this, it'd be a scary thing for me to say, because, you know, addiction, you know, I've seen people with 10, 15 years go back out, right? Yeah, and I don't want to be that guy. So, you know, I try and stay humble and teachable every day, right?
That's fantastic. So that talks about some of the lessons that you learned through that process, being humble, being empathetic mm-hmm. to others, those kinds of things. What were the big lessons that you took away from this whole process?
So, you know, basically, I get to see through our work that we do, I get to see all my character defects, all my fears. So these are the lessons I learn, and I believe that, you know, God or the universe constantly puts those things in my path to test me. You know, I hate being told what to do. I hate being yelled at. And, you know, I come from an area where growing up, it was kind of like a kill or be killed. You're on your own and you got to hustle. And so still some of those things, you know, haunt me today, right? So one of the biggest lessons I've learned in recovery is, you know, again, to stay humble, to stay grateful for what I have, to stay teachable, you know, don't get ahead of myself, take it one day at a time, and you know, look for the message, right? And sometimes it's even a newcomer. It's not just the long timer, you know, with 20, 25, 30 years that I listen to. Sometimes you get these newcomers through with, you know, a month clean, and they say certain things and they don't realize how much weight they have, and I take them, right? So I'm always listening and hearing people, and hopefully, you know, I can take that in and improve myself with what I hear, right?
Anything unexpected that you didn't anticipate when you went through this journey?
So coming in, you know, from where I came in, again, I was homeless. I was living in crack basements, horrible environments, you know, hanging with other people. You know, it was a horrible scene, right, Greg? And, you know, all I wanted to do was come in and have some peace, right? Peace of mind, get a good night's rest. And I really had no other expectations, believe it or not. I just wanted to live. I got to a place in my life where I just wanted to live. So nothing else mattered in my life. It was the most important thing. You know, some of the things I've gotten in recovery just blow my mind, right? I had an opportunity to get my family back together. You know, my wife and me are back together. Our relationship's better than ever. I have two beautiful children. We have a house. I have a car outside. You know, I have this treatment center now. It's like I never would have imagined in 1,000 years, 9 years ago, you know, sitting in a crack basement thinking, oh, one day I'm going to have a treatment center and I'm going to be in a position where I help other people, you know, get into recovery. So, you know, what recovery has given me is beyond my wildest dreams. I mean, you know, thank God I didn't settle for what I just wanted. And, you know, what I have today, I'm just so grateful for everything I have. But most importantly, it's the key element of what I wanted was I just wanted that peace of mind. I wanted the, you know, all the crazy thinking to stop. I wanted to lay down and have a good night's rest without my brain constantly working about, you know, what happened yesterday, what happened a year before, and all the craziness in my life, right? So,
So from two perspectives, we'll take the first one. Put yourself in your parents' shoes. What would you do differently, I guess, if you were a parent of a child in this situation? Or would you do the same thing? Or what advice would you give them?
So we work with a lot of parents here, and you know, I never really understood the amount of pain and trauma I caused my family until we started, you know, I started working with families in the center, and I got to see it firsthand what we cause. And the addict, alcoholic really doesn't know. We're oblivious to it, because my thinking was, you know, what do you guys want? It's just me. I'm just hurting myself, right? But I didn't realize that anybody who loves me or is attached to me is feeling the pain without drugs and alcohol, which in my opinion is even worse. See, I was numb through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Now, what we advise families today is, again, you know, support the good decisions and not the bad ones. So we get a lot of families saying, you know, I have a drug addict at home. He's my son. And, you know, he sleeps all day. He goes out all night. He uses drugs in my house. And what I tell families is that that needs to stop. You need to put your foot down. You need to set the boundaries. This behavior cannot be tolerated. Now, today, if I was a parent and, you know, one of my daughters, God forbid, were in the house doing that, I would put a stop to that immediately, knowing that, you know, through my experience, if this behavior doesn't stop and you don't, you know, put an end to this, it's going to continue. And it's a progressive illness, and it's just going to get worse. Now, a mother's worst nightmare is, you know, if I kick this child out, there's a chance they're going to die. And how I respond is, okay, that's fine. Let's take a look at this. Your loved one is dying as we speak. Every day, he's dying a little bit more. And one day, possibly, you're going to come home and you're going to find him or her cold, dead, OD'd in your house. So, you know, the thought of, you know, kicking them out, having them removed from the house is scary. But now what we've done is we've created an opportunity where there's a chance they can reach out and ask for help.
Right.
See, at home, I see a 0% chance of that child or anyone saying, you know, oh my God, I need help, because they still have shelter. They have a little bit of food. They're still getting a little bit of money. They're getting their drug of choice or their alcohol, whatever it may be. So there's really no need for them to change. But when you create some pressure and some boundaries and you say, you're not welcome here anymore, we're not supporting this habit, we're not giving you any money, you can't call here, you can't come here for food. Now we've opened the door to, okay, there's a chance this person can reach out and say, okay, I've had enough pain, you know, I want some help, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So now from the other perspective, the addict's perspective, imagine you're speaking to a bunch of them right now. What would be the words of wisdom that you'd give them?
Man, all I could say is, you know, we get to a place, and I understand where you feel hopeless, helpless. It's impossible to get better. I don't believe it's me. You know, have faith that this work. I'm living proof. I'm like the real McCoy. You know, I was a serious drug addict, alcoholic. There was no hope for me. A lot of people close to me thought I was just going to die that way. And me, myself, I never thought I can get to where I am today. But, you know, again, I'm going to use those words. Getting honest, keeping an open mind, and being willing. You know, I've gotten almost 7 years clean. I never thought it would happen, but please, please give it a shot, because what I believe is everybody's worth it, right? Yeah. And once you get better, you know, and you really want this, you're going to see a whole bunch of cool stuff just start happening around you, right? And I believe the right people come into your life at the right time when you're doing good stuff, right? And then opportunities show up, and you know, you do cool things, right, in recovery. And I love it today. You know, I always thought, you know, what's life going to look like without drugs and alcohol? It must be so sad and depressing and boring. But yet I'm having the time of my life. See, I get to go everywhere. You know, I've been to Hawaii 3 times. I've been to Vegas. I've been to Europe. You know, I go to Florida every year. And all I got to do is not drink or drug, and I get to have all these things. You know, a beautiful wife, my kids, soccer, this place, right? And it's such an easy trade-off, and I'm having the time of my life. And then I look back the last, you know, month or two or year even that I was using, I was alone in a basement, scared, petrified, peeking out of windows. It was not fun. So, you know, and that's how addiction plays, is, oh, I miss those days. But truly and honestly, they were a complete nightmare, you know, compared to my life today, right?
Well, I'm a big believer in people having a journey and a hero's journey. And I certainly would like to say to you, as I said to another guest, you know, you're a big hero. At the end of the day, you went through a hell of a lot, and where you are today and the number of people you're helping around here is just impressive. So thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. You've been incredibly honest and open. And
yeah, thank you, Greg. It was a pleasure and honor, and thanks for coming out. It was great meeting you too.
This concludes our episode for today. I hope you enjoyed it. For more information on the work that I do around innovation and transformation, please check out my website at www.changinglightbulbs.com. And for more information on our amazing sponsor, Delta Oversee, the software company that's dedicated to enabling positive, sustainable change and transformations for organizations, please check out their website at www.deltaoversee.info or give them a shout at 647-513-3582. Don't forget to mention that you heard about us on this podcast. Thanks again, and never forget to continually adapt and transform for tomorrow's reality.